Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Hare Krishna. That was very muted. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Better. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay, so we'll continue on with the Prabhupada, the Living Bhagavatam seminar. We were talking yesterday about Prabhupada's standard of 16 rounds and how he always insisted that that was the minimum that one should do in order for one's chanting to be really effective. So sometimes, of course, that standard was challenged. I mentioned that before. Some people questioned, oh, you're only doing 16 rounds. And according to some authorities, you must be doing at least 64 rounds, etc. So that challenge to Prabhupada's standard came actually from a fairly unexpected source in 1976 from one of his own ex-personal servants. A man who was quite well respected in ISKCON at that time, and he was one of the BBT editors. So Prabhupada had received a few reports that this man had been going outside of our Krishna Balaram Mandir. He was living in Vrindavan, and he was hearing classes from different sources, some Goswami and Govardhan, and he had begun to mix with some persons outside of ISKCON. As a result of that, then he started to become critical of ISKCON. And when Prabhupada returned to India after his last world tour in mid-August in Bombay, this man was there amongst the devotees to greet him. At that time, we had no indication of what his status was. Things appeared to be okay. And on the 15th of August, Prabhupada met with this particular devotee, Nitai Das, and the temple president, Giriraj Prabhu, to discuss the creation of a new library in the Juhu Beach temple. So there was no darshan this afternoon, although Prabhupada did go up onto the roof to sit for a while with the devotees. Then it began to rain, so he returned to his sitting room. There he met with Giriraj and Nitai Prabhu to discuss requirements for a library for the new building. Nitai has been given 4,000 rupees by the temple to purchase books for it. Prabhupada said the library should contain all of his own books, those of all the Acharyas, as well as all the Upanishads and other bona fide Vedic texts. He said, even those works of Sripad Sankaracharya could be included, but not anything from Gandhi, Vivekananda, or Ramtirtha. They are all rascals, he said. The Vedas instruct us that we should not even look on their faces. I was puzzled, and I asked, doesn't Lord Chaitanya instruct that if anybody reads Sankaracharya's books, then he'll be doomed? Not if he reads with proper understanding, Prabhupada said. We can read to know what is their philosophy. So after we left Prabhupada's room, I spent a few minutes with Nitai. His pallid, lackluster complexion prompted me to ask about his health. He assured me that he was all right, but to me he seemed to be drained and lacking in vitality. So I could see something wasn't quite right with him. But of course we didn't know what at that time. From Bombay, Prabhupada went down to Hyderabad. He opened the temple there on Janmashtami, had his Vyasa Pooja there, and we stayed for about a week afterwards. Then about the 26th of August, we flew back up to Delhi, and Prabhupada stayed there for about a week, and we celebrated Radhastami there. At that time, the Delhi temple had just got a new building in Lajpat Nagar 3. And then from there, on 2nd of September, Prabhupada came to Vrindavan. So as soon as we arrived there, then some rumors were circulating. We started to hear about them. And in fact, Nittai Das had not been seen since his meeting with Prabhupada in mid-August in Bombay. So this was on September the 4th. There seems to be a major problem with Nittai Das, Prabhupada's former servant. He was supposed to be helping to establish a Gurukul here, as well as the deity worship. But he has not been seen since visiting Prabhupada in Bombay 2 weeks ago. Rupa Vilas Das, who has been here about 6 months and is heading up the Gurukul, came to see Srila Prabhupada in the evening to discuss what to do. Prabhupada questioned Rupa Vilas about Nittai's propensities. His approach was that if Nittai was not happy with his service, then that could be adjusted to something that he liked to do. Rupa Vilas said that Nittai was a good scholar and he liked to study languages and to write, but he was not an effective Gurukul teacher. Prabhupada asked if he had written anything, and when Rupa Vilas said that he had done some Back to Godhead articles, Prabhupada asked, "So, why does he not write? If he has a taste for something in particular, then he can do that. But nobody knows where he is." He shook his head in disapproval and disappointment. "He is not fixed up. He wanted to take charge of the deity worship, and then he went away." So it was mentioned by Gopal Krishna and Harikesh Maharaj that he had left with the 4,000 rupees that he had been given in Bombay for the library and was now said to be living in Radhakund. Prabhupada was a little disgusted. "Just see." One of the devotees added, "One boy came from Bombay and he told me that Nittai had told him that if I leave, then I have to go." Meaning if I leave ISKCON. Prabhupada shook his head. "Then he's at Radhakund. He has taken that 4,000 rupees and he's gone to Radhakund. That is his taste, to sit idly and become famous as a very good scholar." Rupa Vilas said that Nittai did not attend many classes nor even teach very often. Prabhupada curled his lips a little in dissatisfaction. "Restless, that's all. Mind not fixed up, restless. Now, what he'll do with that 4,000 rupees? Oh, it is a very good program. If I get some thousands of rupees and sit down in Radhakund and eat, that is a very good idea." Gopal Krishna said that he thought that they could find him. Prabhupada, however, said it wasn't a question of finding him. He said, "That is not difficult, but what is his mentality? Why he has gone to Radhakund if he was teaching here? You cannot rely upon him." So that was on the 4th of September. 5 days later, we got some more specific information about him. This was on September the 9th. So complaints about Nittai Das have been increasing daily. Apparently, he's been telling the devotees that it is not possible to go back to Godhead in this life unless one chants 100,000 names of Krishna every day, or 64 rounds. He has been claiming that if one only chants 16 rounds, then it will take many births. Many devotees have been affected by this nonsense, which Nittai got from some advanced devotee in Govardhan. Prabhupada said he has become a Sahajiya. He pointed out that at initiation we agree to chant not less than 16 rounds. "We are not saying only 16 rounds," Prabhupada said. "You can chant more if you want, 64. But actually we're not capable of chanting 64 or 1 lakh of names a day. That is not possible for you." So then on the 11th, more news came. Gopal Krishna Maharaj had met Yogananda Das, who had been renting a small house in Govardhan with Nittai. Yogananda told him that for the last few weeks he had also not seen Nittai. Then today, just by chance, he said, he saw Nittai sitting in a train at the Mathura railway station. So he just happened to be at the station. He looked in one of the carriages and there was Nittai sitting in the carriage. Nittai suddenly pulled out the 4,000 rupees that he had been given in Bombay to purchase books for the library. And he asked Yogananda to return it to the temple. When Yogananda had asked him what he was going to do, Nittai said, "I'm now going to Jaipur to say goodbye to Govindaji." Govindaji means the deity. "Then I'm going to Navadvip, and then I shall return to America because my wife has sent me a ticket." Yogananda affirmed that Nittai has indeed left ISKCON. When Prabhupada heard this, he shook his head in disapproval. So the next day, on September the 12th, there was a discussion on Nittai's departure again today. Prabhupada expressed strong displeasure about his propaganda that unless you chant 64 rounds daily, you cannot go back to Godhead in this life. "We don't mind if you chant 64 rounds," Prabhupada said. "That is good if you can do it. I never said only 16. 16 is the minimum. You must do that. But the difficulty is that some of our devotees cannot even chant 16. So how they'll do 64? If you can do 64 rounds, then do it. But why do you have to go back to New York to chant 64 rounds? Why leave Vrindavan? Vrindavan is the best place to chant 64 rounds. But you are going to Jaipur to say goodbye to Govindaji. You rascal, get out. You cannot stay here. That is Govindaji. Just to save this rascal from going to hell by his bad association, Krishna is forcing him to leave. You cannot stay here. Get out." It is Krishna's mercy that he was made to leave and give back the 4,000 rupees. 1 minute later, and he would have been missed at the railway station, and he would have kept that money. It was Krishna's arrangement. So that he was thinking, "Now I'm going to say goodbye to the deity, Govindaji." And Prabhupada was saying that Govindaji is saying, "No, you get out, you cannot stay, you're an offender. If you stay in Vrindavan, you'll go to hell." This is how Maya tricks us. Yeah. When people leave devotional service, they have so many reasons that they think rationalize confirm their decision that they have to leave. But whatever it is, the real reason is that they're not being allowed to stay in the association of devotees anymore because they've become offensive in one way or in another. And therefore Krishna impels them to leave. In their minds they think, "I am making the decision." But actually the fact is that Krishna is not allowing them to remain anymore. So this was the case with Nittai. So September the 14th, 2 days later, Nittai sent Prabhupada a letter today explaining his reasons for leaving ISKCON. So this was the first direct communication that Prabhupada had from him. At first, Harikesh Maharaj didn't want to read the letter to Prabhupada because it was so offensive. But when Hansaduda Maharaj saw it, he insisted that it should be shown to Prabhupada so that we could hear his rebuttals of the points that Nittai raised. So this afternoon, after his nap, we went into his room and sat before him. Prabhupada was grave as Harikesh read out the letter. He responded point by point, not to dictate a reply as he normally does, but simply for our benefit. Nittai began by disclaiming the authenticity of our disciplic line. He cited Radharaman Charandas Babaji, a contemporary of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who claimed that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was never initiated by Srila Gaur Kishore. It was well known, he said, that Gaur Kishore never had any disciples. Prabhupada responded that Radharaman Charandas Babaji was a Kanista Adhikari, whom Srila Bhaktisiddhanta strongly criticized for advertising himself as a great preacher without his having any actual knowledge of the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. Nittai went on to say that now he doubted ISKCON's teachings. He said, they are just opposite to or a misrepresentation of what is actually in the Shastra. And as an example, he offered a quote from the Chaitanya Bhagavat, where Lord Chaitanya says that one cannot become one of his associates unless one chants 1 lakh of names daily, or 64 rounds. Prabhupada's reply was practical. If you take all of the so-called Goswamis, Babajis and Mahatmas in the whole of Vrindavan area together, they have not advanced Lord Chaitanya's movement 1 inch. Nittai's next point was that Srila Haridas Thakur was the Namacharya. Since he had chanted 3 lakhs of names per day, we either have to imitate that or keep that as our goal. Nittai asserted that if we chant at least 1 lakh of names daily, then Krishna will automatically give us prema. But Prabhupada disagreed. He said that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had condemned the idea of sitting down and chanting in one place as a cheating process adopted by unscrupulous persons who were desirous of obtaining name and fame as a so-called advanced devotee. He added that the idea that Krishna will automatically give prema is actually Karma Mimamsa philosophy. Krishna is not obligated to give prema to anyone, he said, no matter how many rounds they chant. Incredibly, at the end of Nittai's letter, he had the audacity and hypocrisy to tell Srila Prabhupada that he was now going out to seek the shelter of some other great Mahatma in whom I can place greater faith. And he asked for Prabhupada's blessings so that I may advance more and more. Prabhupada's response was very strong. He said, "Yes, I bless you, you shall never advance." He then dictated a telegram to be sent to all the GBCs. "Please let it be known that Nittai has become a venomous serpent. Be careful of him. Your ever well wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami." So that was, you know, the culmination of several weeks of rumors and stories that we were hearing. Now Prabhupada heard, you know, the actual reasons why Nittai felt that he had to reject Prabhupada as his guru and leave ISKCON. So I'll go over a couple of these points just to elaborate them a bit more. His first point was there that this idea that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had never been initiated because it was well known that Gaurkishore never had any disciples. So, of course, Gaurkishore Das Babaji, he was a Paramahamsa. He would come and he would hear Bhaktivinoda Thakur giving his classes, especially when he was in residence in Swarup Ganj in Mayapur. And the story, as we have it from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, is that, because he was a young man, he was a brilliant scholar. He was known as the walking encyclopedia. He had been instructed by his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that you go now and you accept initiation, you request initiation from Srila Gaurkishore Das Babaji. Gaurkishore Das Babaji was known as a very, very humble personality. He also lived very solitarily. He didn't like to mix with other people. He liked to just simply sit and chant constantly. And sometimes, in order to get away from people, you know, bothering him, coming and asking for blessings and benedictions and this and that, he would even go so far as to sit in the stool area where people went to pass stool, because he knew that, you know, ordinary people wouldn't come there. And he would sit there and chant his rounds, yeah, because he could find some peace there. So he was a very solitary figure, a Paramahamsa. And he was also materially illiterate. He couldn't read or write. But actually he knew the Shastra perfectly. Any topic he could talk on, he would quote Shastra, so he knew by hearing. So when this young man, who he knew to be a very great, you know, devotee himself, came to ask him for initiation, he refused. for various reasons. But he was feeling that this is, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta or Saraswati, Siddhanta Saraswati. He is a brilliant scholar. I'm an illiterate. What can I do? So he didn't, you know, agree to initiate him. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent his son back again to ask again. Second time he asked again. Again, Gaurakishore refused. Then again, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he told his son, you must take initiation from Gaurakishore. So again he went, and he made such a strong plea, and he was so humble in his approach, that finally Gaurakishore Das Babaji agreed. And he gave him the name Sri Varshabhanabhi Dayachidas, Varshabhanabhi Devi Dayachidas. So he was initiated, and he was the only disciple of Gaurakishore Das Babaji. Now, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, as Prabhupada mentioned, was very strongly critical of this Radharaman Charandas Babaji. Radharaman Charandas had started the chanting of Nitai Gaur Radhe Shyam, Japa Hare Krishna Hare Ram. He made that up due to a misunderstanding of his own guru's instructions. And the meaning of that was that Nitai Gaur is Radhe Shyam. Of course, that's contrary to the Shastric information. We know that Nitai Gaur is Krishna and Balaram. But he was saying Nitai Gaur is Radhe Shyam. And Japa Hare Krishna Hare Ram means you don't chant the Hare Krishna mantra out loud, you only do it japa. So he spread this mantra all over Orissa initially, then all over Bengal, then all over Vrindavan, and he became a very popular so-called spiritual leader. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati knew the real Siddhanta, and he was living in Puri, of course, with his father when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the magistrate there, and so he would preach against that, and he would criticize very strongly, you know, this bogus mantra. So it became such a conflict that at one point Bhaktivinoda Thakur advised his son, now you go out from Puri, it's causing too much disturbance. He wasn't disapproving, you know, of his criticizing and exposing the defects in that chanting. But at the same time, because it was causing such a big disturbance, he said, all right, now let it just cool off and you go to Mayapur. So that way then there was a big conflict. So in order to get back to Siddhanta Saraswati, then Radharaman Charan began, and his Babaji friends began to claim that Bhaktisiddhanta was never actually initiated by Gaurakishore. And in this way, they wanted to put it out that this man is not in disciplic succession, so he's not bona fide. So that was their way of, you know, attacking Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But the only evidence that they could prove, or they could produce, that he wasn't initiated, was simply that it was well known that Gaurakishore never had any disciples. That's all. No other evidence, just that it was well known. Yeah. In other words, by hearsay and by their own estimation. And of course, you know, Gaurakishore, as we've mentioned, he used to like to stay aloof. He never mixed with these bogus Babajis. He always stayed on his own. Although he would come, you know, he would listen to Bhaktivinoda Thakur lecturing, etc. So, but mainly he was always on his own, and he kept himself aloof from everybody. So how do they know that he never had any disciples? Unless they were with him 24 hours a day, continuously, how do they know that he never initiated anybody? They don't. Now, a few years back, I went on the internet, and this Nitai Das, ex-Nitai Das, he had a webpage. He's become some kind of a professor in some college or university in America. So he had a webpage, and he gives a little biography of himself, autobiography. And in that, he mentions how he had been initiated by Srila Prabhupada, but then later on he left. And then he says the reason why he left was because he was presented with this idea that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had not been initiated. And if he wasn't initiated, then of course, then that means that Srila Prabhupada was not also in a bona fide parampara. And without being in the parampara, then how can anybody, you know, spread Krishna consciousness? So he said that presented him with a dilemma. And then he had to make a choice whether to believe, you know, this stuff that he'd heard from the Babaji's, that Bhaktisiddhanta was not initiated, or whether he should accept that he was. So he says there directly that actually there's no proof that he was not initiated. It was just some hearsay from the Babaji's. But he said, at a certain point, I got to the point where I just decided that I had to accept what the Babaji's said. And then at that point, then I had to reject, you know, my connection with Bhaktivedanta Swami. So that was it. That was his evidence, you know, that I just decided I should accept it. It was just, he admitted that it was hearsay, no proof whatsoever, but he accepted it. Such a fool. Yeah, as if Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was a liar. Yeah, such a great Paramahamsa, spread Krishna consciousness, you know, far and wide, brilliant scholar, and he's a liar. That's basically what he's saying. That when he told the story how he, you know, had approached Gaur Kishore two or three times and then finally he was initiated and he got the name Vrishabhanubhi Devi Dayachidas, that was all just some concoction and a made up story. And why would he do that? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was a brilliant scholar. Everybody knew it. Any Vaishnava would have been very happy to have him as their disciple. He could have approached any big, you know, Vaishnava and asked them for initiation. They would have been in ecstasy to have such a qualified disciple. Why would he go to somebody, you know, obscure and ask him for initiation? Yeah. Unless it was true. I mean, what would he gain from that by claiming that he was the disciple of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji? There was nothing for Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati to gain from that, except the fact that Gaur Kishore was actually a Paramahamsa himself, and he did actually take shelter, you know, at his lotus feet on the order of his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. There's no reason why he would have lied about that. There was nothing, you know, that he would have gained from that, except, of course, that, you know, by doing so, he was connected with, you know, a pure devotee of the Lord. So, you know, this is all this bogus propaganda. But this rascal, Nittai, he accepted it without any evidence, without any inquiry, without coming to Srila Prabhupada and saying, well, I heard this, what's the real story? Nothing. But he just, by this bad association, he got contaminated and therefore he rejected Srila Prabhupada. So that's the first bit. And then the second point that he makes is that therefore now he doubts ISKCON's teachings, which he said are just a misrepresentation of what's in Shastra. And the quote that he offered as proof of that misrepresentation was that Lord Chaitanya says, unless you chant 1 lakh of names or 64 rounds, you can't be my associate. So that's in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. But Prabhupada's reply was that you take all the Mahatmas and Goswamis and Sadhus or Babaji's and the whole of Vrindavan and you'll see they have not advanced Lord Chaitanya's movement 1 inch. In other words, what he's saying is that if you're actually an associate of Lord Chaitanya, yeah, you claim you're chanting 64 rounds, so now I'm an associate of Lord Chaitanya, then that should be practically manifest. Lord Chaitanya's desire was Prithivi Chayachayajato Nagaradi Gram. Yeah? Krishna Upadesh. You become a guru. And you instruct others on the science of Krishna consciousness. You spread the holy name to every town and village. That's the proof that you're actually an associate of Lord Chaitanya if you are fulfilling that desire of the Lord. And if you're not doing anything for that, then how you can claim that you're actually an associate? So who is the real associate, yeah, of Lord Chaitanya? Those who are spreading the glories of his, you know, holy name all over the world, or those who are sitting in Vrindavan and wearing, you know, the dress of a Babaji, but doing nothing for spreading Krishna consciousness? So very practical. Yeah, judge a thing by the result. So that was Prabhupada's reply. You criticize us, you know, you're only chanting 16 rounds, therefore you're not associate of Lord Chaitanya. But what is the practical evidence? So that was Prabhupada's reply to that one. And then the next one was, of course, that if you chant at least 1 lakh of names a day, even if we can't do 3 lakhs of names every day, 300,000, or that's about 192 rounds every day, at least if we do 64 rounds every day, then Krishna will automatically give us prema. And as Prabhupada said, that is karma mimamsa philosophy. It's atheistic. Karma mimamsa means that everybody, you know, performs work. For every action that's performed, there's a reaction. So whatever work that you do, there must be a reaction, a corresponding reaction. God has nothing to do with it. It's all just action and reaction. Even if there is a God, he is obliged to give or to award the results of the actions that we perform. So it's our own actions that are supreme. God is a servant of our actions, and he is obliged to give the result of whatever actions we perform. That's karma mimamsa. It's an atheist philosophy. So he's saying there that if you chant 64 rounds, automatically Krishna will give you prema. That's saying that because you are doing a certain action, God is obliged to give you a certain result. Karma mimamsa. Actually, Krishna prema, love for Krishna, is given by Krishna himself to whoever he likes. And you can chant 3 million rounds every day, but Krishna is not obliged to give you prema. You may not be chanting any rounds, you know. And as Prabhupada made the point, when Arjuna was fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was not chanting Hare Krishna, right? He wasn't chanting his rounds, but Krishna was personally there with him, protecting him at every moment on the chariot. So, you know, this is not the standard to judge by. So in this way then, you know, because this man's intelligence became completely contaminated by bad association, and he raised this objection on this basis of, you know, that in ISKCON we only chant 16 rounds, and therefore you can't go back to Godhead. So now the final point there is that, you know, at the end of it, he asked Srila Prabhupada, you know, that now I have to go out and find somebody else to be my guru. Yeah, you're not good enough. I have to find some other great Mahatma in whom I can place greater faith. Please give me your blessings to do that. What a rascal. Yeah, what a nonsense he is. And Prabhupada's response, yes, I bless you, you shall never advance. Now that raises a doubt that if Prabhupada was a Mahabhagwat Paramahamsa, well-wisher of every living being, then why would he curse this man that you will never advance? I mean, it sounds very harsh. And in fact, in 1975, when Prabhupada was in Los Angeles, there were a couple of disciples who were kind of drifting away and who were rationalizing, you know, they're not following the principles, they were keeping long hair, and they had so many things that, well, you know, you don't have to shave your head, you don't have to do these regulative principles in order to be a Vaishnav. And they had actually gone to Prabhupada and had a discussion with him where they raised those very points, that but we don't necessarily have to follow your teachings in order to, you know, develop Krishna consciousness. Or we don't have to be, you know, following the rules and regulations as you define them. And then Prabhupada said, yes, that's all right. If you want, you can keep long hairs. But my disciples have shaved heads. In other words, if you want to be my disciples, you have to follow the standards that I give. So they actually left. Prabhupada didn't curse them. He didn't say, because you're rejecting me as your guru, now you're going to hell, or now you can't make any further advancement. He said, all right, if you don't want to follow, that's up to you. You go. Yeah, go wherever you like. The mood of a preacher is that he's giving this gift of Krishna consciousness. If people accept it, fine. He'll help them to develop it more and more. If they don't accept it, that's fine. That's their choice. You know, it's not that he feels personally affronted when somebody doesn't do what he says or doesn't accept what he says. He's just simply there to represent Krishna, that's all. So why then did Prabhupada tell this man that, yeah, yes, I bless you, you will never advance? So anybody can think of the reason? Yes, that's exactly the point. Because he insulted Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was his spiritual master. Prabhupada didn't care whether, you know, he had something good to say or bad to say about himself. But criticizing his spiritual master, you know, basically saying that he was a liar and that he wasn't a bona fide, you know, representative of the disciplic succession, that Prabhupada was not going to tolerate, and therefore he responded in the fashion that he did. So anyway, that was an interesting episode. Are you going to stand there all day, sir, or are you going to sit?
I'll be standing in a comfortable stand.
All right. You're a very imposing figure there in the doorway. That's all right. You stand wherever you like. You have earned the privilege. Okay, so that was on the 14th. Prabhupada got that letter. And then on September the 16th, 2 days later, Prabhupada was giving his class. At that time, he was speaking from the first canto, chapter 7, which is the chapter about Ashvatthama, chanting the mantras to invoke the Brahmastra, which he was going to throw at the Pandavas. So in speaking about the power of sound, it naturally led Prabhupada to speak about the ultimate mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. He said, if on the material platform or the mental platform a mantra can act so wonderfully, then how much spiritually the mantra can benefit you? You simply have to imagine. So this Hare Krishna mantra is completely spiritual. If you chant it, spiritually enlivened, then surely it will act. Paramvijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtana. It will act. And therefore chanting is so important. There is no difference between Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his holy name, Krishna. It requires good brain to understand how Krishna can appear in a form which can be seen by us, or Krishna can appear in a form of sound which we can hear. It is for our benefit. So you should immediately see that the Sankirtan, Hare Krishna, is Krishna and Radha, Hara and Krishna, Radha Krishna, or Sitaram, or Lakshmi Narayan, or any form of Lord Vishnu. So Hare Krishna means the Supreme Lord and his spiritual potency. So we address Hare, all the energy, spiritual energy of the Lord, and Krishna, oh, the Supreme Lord. So Hare Krishna, the same thing. So what is the meaning of addressing Hey Krishna, Hey Radhe, Hey Ram? Why? That just engage me in your service. So this is our prayer. It is not our prayer that, oh Krishna, oh Ram, give me some money, give me some woman. No, this is not the prayer. Of course, in the neophyte stage, they pray like that, but this is not Sudha Bhakti or pure devotion. Pure devotion means to pray to the Lord, begging some service. My Lord, kindly engage me in your service. That is the perfection of life, when one is engaged in service of the Lord in love. So in discussing chanting, Prabhupada made a strong and not so veiled reference to Nittai. So you can become a very great saint and live in a secluded place and become puffed up that you have become a very great personality. And people may come to see him that, oh, he is not to be seen. He is engaged in chanting. My Guru Maharaj has condemned this. He said, Manatumi Kishara Vaishnav. My dear mind, it is your mental concoction that you were thinking that you will become a very big Vaishnav. You do not do anything and you sit down in a secluded place and imitating Haridas Thakur chanting. So, you are a nonsense. Why? Nijanara Gari Pratishtaratare to get some cheap adoration as a great chanter. Because if one is actually chanting, then why should he be attracted by women and beedies? You know what a beedie is? Cigarettes, cheap cigarettes. If he is actually in such a position like Haridas Thakur, then why should he be attracted by material things? So this is a false show only. That is not possible for an ordinary person. Therefore, the ordinary person must be physically engaged. That is not physical, that is also transcendental, but always busy in some business of Krishna consciousness. That is wanted. Not that, oh, I've become a great scholar, and now I've learned how to become a great Vaishnav. I chant 64 rounds and think of my wife somewhere, and then goodbye to Govindaji and leave Vrindavan. Everybody knew that who he was referring to, and there was muted laughter amongst the audience. With an ironic smile, Prabhupada went on, "These rascaldom do not follow. Govindaji drives such rascals away from Vrindavan." So Vrindavan, one who is living in Vrindavan, he must be very anxious how to spread the glories of Vrindavan Chandra all over the world. That is wanted. Not that Vrindavan Chandra is my private property and I sit down in one place and lick up. No, that is not wanted. That is condemned by my Guru Maharaj. He said, "What kind of Vaishnav, rascal, you are? Simply for cheap adoration, you are living in a secluded place. Tabahari nama kevala kaitava. Your chanting of so-called Hare Krishna mantra is simply cheating." So he has said that. One must be ready to preach very vigorously. And that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's also order. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never said, "You chant." He has certainly given the chanting, but so far as his mission is concerned, he said that every one of you become a guru, amara agyaya guru anatariye desh, and you deliver, preach, that people can understand what is Krishna, prativichaya chajato nagaradi. So that is his mission. It is not that become a big Vaishnav and sit down and imitate. That is all rascaldom. So don't follow this thing. So at least we cannot advise you in this way. We have learned from our Guru Maharaj that preaching is a very, very important thing. And when one is actually an experienced preacher, then he is able to chant the Hare Krishna mantra without any offense. Before that, this so-called chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, so you may practice without any offenses and giving up all of the business to make a show of being a big Vaishnav, that is not required. Thank you very much. So far, Prabhupada has spoken about Nittai's deviation in private to just a few of us. But this public criticism this morning left no doubt in the devotees' minds what is the real Siddhanta and standard of practice. I just mentioned there that there is some propaganda I've seen on the internet flying around in the last few months where, you know, it's been claimed that first of all you become expert in chanting. Then when you're expert in chanting, then you can go and preach. That's exactly the opposite to what Srila Prabhupada said. First you go out and preach. By preaching, making that endeavor, working very hard, then you gain the adhikar or the qualification so that you can actually chant properly. Yeah. So we shouldn't be fooled by this business of sitting down in one place in Vrindavan and first of all you reach the ecstatic levels of Krishna Prema in chanting and then you go and preach. That's not a fact. It's actually the other way around. The qualification is you go and preach, you work hard on behalf of Krishna. He's pleased with that, as he says in Bhagavad Gita, that there'll never be one more dear to me than he who preaches this message of Bhagavad Gita. That, Prabhupada said, is the fast track to becoming elevated in Krishna consciousness, that you go and preach. Then you get the adhikar, you'll be able to chant Hare Krishna, Kirtaniya Sadahari, 24 hours a day. So that was the 16th. The next day then, Prabhupada then again giving his class just to answer this point that it's criticism. If you only chant 16 rounds a day, you can't go back to Godhead in this one lifetime. So on the 17th of September, Prabhupada pointed out that because Ashvatthama knew the science of mantra, he did not have to manufacture his nuclear weapon in a laboratory by experimenting with various chemicals, as the modern scientists do. He simply touched water and chanted with full concentration. Again, comparing this with the potency of the Maha Mantra, Prabhupada said, "If we take it as childish play or a formality, then it will act, but it will take a long time. But if you do it properly, you will be quickly successful. In one life, you will be successful. You don't require to wait." My Guru Maharaj used to say that although this process is guaranteed, but don't wait for another life. You finish your business in this life. He told us that chanting, even if neglectfully done, will always have some level of success. But still he stressed that one should carefully chant, following the rules and regulations, and thus attain full success in this life. So we can make our choice, he said, because Krishna always gives us that chance to make our choice. Yatech chasi tata kuru. Whatever you like, you can do. So my request, it is my duty, because you have accepted me as your spiritual master, so I am repeating my spiritual master's order, that don't wait for another life. That is very risky, another life. Maybe I'm given the chance of taking my birth in a good Brahmana family or a rich family, but there is again a chance of being spoiled. So don't wait for another life. So Prabhupada stressed that, and that means that the sadhana that Prabhupada gave us, the standards that he established, were specifically designed to take any serious practitioner back to home, back to Godhead, in this one lifetime. So that minimum of 16 rounds, because Prabhupada always said, you can chant more than that, as many rounds as you like, if you are qualified to do so. But minimum 16, and if you follow that minimum standard, Prabhupada's given that guarantee that you will go back to Godhead in this life. So we should just have that faith that Prabhupada actually knew what he was talking about, that he actually knew Krishna, and that he was acting under direct inspiration and instruction from Krishna and his Guru Maharaj in establishing the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and the standards that are upheld there, you know, are perfectly adequate for taking us back home, back to Godhead. Otherwise, why would Prabhupada bother in giving a standard that wouldn't take us back to Godhead in one life? What would be the point? He never said that if you follow my instructions, then gradually over a period of many lifetimes, you know, you'll get purified and eventually you'll go back to Godhead. No, he said, you follow these standards, you will go back to Godhead in this one lifetime. And of course, we've actually seen practically disciples of Srila Prabhupada who have successfully completed their business in this lifetime and have actually gone back to Godhead, you know, when they left their bodies. Because we can't say that we've seen them in Goloka Vrindavan, but we can say that at the time of their leaving, they were detached from everything material, they were fully fixed on thinking of Krishna, they were hearing the chanting as they left, you know, all the auspicious signs of their exit were present there, and from that we can understand that they've got the mercy of Krishna and they were accepted by him as they left their bodies. So we don't have any doubts that the program that Prabhupada gave us is completely spiritually efficacious. So, let's see. Going on then. Few things in the aftermath of that criticism from Nittai and his leaving. This was on again in Vrindavan about a few weeks later on October the 4th, 1976. Prabhupada was continuing on with his classes on that section about Ashvatthama. So Pradyumna read the verse out. It was verse 44 from chapter 7, canto 1. And he read out the verse, "It was by Duryodhana's mercy that you learned the military art of throwing arrows and the confidential art of controlling weapons." So Prabhupada repeated the Sanskrit of the verse. And then he says, this is also another Vedic civilization, that if you were benefited by somebody, you should always remain obliged to him. Shikshito yad anugrahat. There is one Bengali proverb, Guru Mara Vidya, that the guru, you learn from him first of all, then you kill him. You don't care for the guru. So this is demonic. By the grace of guru, you learn something. Then when you learn something, then you become greater than him, and then you don't care for the guru. So this is demonic. Even if you have learned something, you must always feel obliged. Atta padarshayat. So this is Vedic civilization. Draupadi was advising Arjuna that you have learned. Feel always obliged. Yeah. Atta padarshayat. This is the Vedic culture. That this military art, by his grace, by the guru's grace, now you are expert in the science of military art. And suppose his son has committed some sinful activity, so you cannot punish him or retaliate, so that the guru's family will be aggrieved. So this was the situation. Ashvatthama, of course, was the son of Dronacharya. Dronacharya was the guru of the Pandavas. Now the son of the guru, he had gone off the track, he'd done something wrong, he'd been captured, and actually, by the regular law, he should have been killed, he should have been executed for all the atrocities that he had committed. He was practically a mass murderer. Yeah? On the last day, the last night of the Battle of Kurukshetra, after victory had been declared, then Ashvatthama, in the middle of the night, he went with Kripacharya, I think it was. They snuck into the camp of the Pandavas, because the Pandavas were not there. They were camping the final night in the Kuru's camp, because they were the victors. So that was the tradition, that the victorious side, they would occupy the camp of the enemy at the end of the battle. But some hundreds of warriors were still left in the camp of the Pandavas. Ashvatthama snuck there in the middle of the night and burnt all the tents down with all the occupants inside. Those that ran out, they butchered them. They woke up, they jumped out, they ran out, they're burning tents. Ashvatthama was there and he butchered the whole lot. And everybody that was left on the side of the Pandavas was slaughtered mercilessly and defenselessly. They were not able to defend themselves. So Ashvatthama really, became an extreme character. And then he tried to throw this Brahmastra to kill, the one heir of the Pandavas that was left, Parikshit, in the womb of his mother. So again, trying to abort a baby. That's punishable by death. So he was captured by the Pandavas. And now Arjuna had to face, this dilemma of what to do with him. Because by law he should have been killed. But Draupadi, although, her five sons were also amongst those that were slaughtered in the camp by Ashvatthama, so she lost all her young boys. Still, she was advising that he is the son of your guru. You're obliged to your guru. It was by your guru's mercy and grace that you would learn how to fight. Now, if you kill his son, then the whole guru's family will be aggrieved. So you can't do that. You have that obligation because of your guru. So Prabhupada's making that point then, that this is Vedic culture. Not only is he personally, but even in his absence, because Dronacharya had already been killed in the battle. So at this point he was already gone. But still in his absence, his wife, his family, you have to consider them. So there is nothing what to do there. So then he asked Pradyumna to read out the purport, which says, Dhanuveda, or military science, was taught by Dronacharya with all its confidential secrets of throwing and controlling by Vedic hymns. Gross military science is dependent on material weapons, but finer than that is the art of throwing weapons saturated with Vedic hymns, which act more effectively than gross material weapons, like machine guns or atomic bombs. The control is by Vedic mantras, or the transcendental science of sound. It is said in the Ramayana that Maharaj Dasarath, the father of Lord Ram, used to control arrows by sound only. He could pierce his target with his arrows by hearing the sound only, without even seeing the object. So this is a finer military science than that of the gross material military weapons. So that was the purport. Then Prabhupada joins in again and he says, it is called Shabdabedi. Just like I cannot see where is a bird, but I can hear him chirping. So Shabdabedi, I can throw an arrow wherever that bird is, simply by hearing the sound, and it will go there and kill him. So that is called Shabdabedi. Maharaj Dasarath used to do it. Therefore he was cursed that he would die, being aggrieved when Ramachandra would be banished. So then he asked Pradyumna to go on with the purport. And in the purport, again Prabhupada is saying, so this is a finer military science than that of the gross military weapons that are used nowadays. Arjuna was taught all of this, and therefore Draupadi wished that Arjuna should feel obliged to Acharya Drona for all of these benefits. And in the absence of Dronacharya, his son was the representative. So that was the opinion of the good lady Draupadi. It may be argued why Dronacharya, a rigid Brahmana, should be a teacher in military science. But the reply is that the Brahmana should be a teacher regardless of what his department of knowledge actually is. A learned Brahmana should become a teacher, a priest, and a recipient of charity. A bona fide Brahmana is authorized to accept such professions. So Prabhupada continues on then with the class. He says, so there's nothing special to be explained. The only important part of this verse is don't learn Guru Mara Vidya. Yeah, how to kill your guru. Even if you become more learned than your guru, you should not exhibit it before your guru. You should always remain a fool, rascal number one. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He showed himself by his example. Guru More Mukha Deki Karila Shashan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not a murka, but he has taught us that before the guru, one should always remain murka. So this is the advancement. Not that I know more than my guru, I don't now care for my guru. Now give me a blessing so that I can find out some better guru. So Prabhupada, it was on Prabhupada's mind. So this nonsense, so you don't find, so if your guru is not perfect, then why are you asking blessings to find out another? Right? You're asking an imperfect person to give you blessings to find somebody more perfect. It's not even logical what to speak about, you know, the etiquette. So anyway, this Guru Mara Vidya should be avoided. That is the instruction in this verse that we can get, and this is the Vedic way. It is not that Draupadi is speaking, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also speaking. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very strict on this point. As soon as Vallabhacharya spoke that, oh, I have written a better commentary than Sridhar Swami, immediately Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became offended. He said, oh, you have become more than Sridhar Swami? You don't care for your Swami? Because that was a play on words. Swami also means husband. If the wife rejects the husband, then she becomes a prostitute, according to Vedic culture. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, you know, having a very strong dig at Vallabhacharya, that now you're claiming that you are, you know, you've written a better commentary than Sridhar Swami, who was the original commentator on the Bhagavatam. So now you're saying that you have surpassed him and that there's some fault, or you're rejecting his teaching. So therefore you were a prostitute. You don't care for your Swami. That was the point. So he remarked immediately, Swamiye jana na mani vishara bitare. So this is the system. You cannot overrule the acharya. Acharyo pasanam. Acharya must be always worshipped. Even if you, by ABCD, if you become more learned than the acharya. But actually that is not possible. But even if you foolishly think like that, still you should not exhibit your foolishness, that you know more than the acharya. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction by his life example. He has taught us that the more that we remain ignorant and foolish before the acharya and before the guru, then the more we advance. Real success is how one is faithful to his guru. That is real success. Yashadeve para bhakti yatadeve tata guru. It is not by education or by grammatical knowledge that you can learn anything. No, it is by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that grace comes down through the grace of the Guru. That grace also does not come directly. So we should not be neglecting this point. Yashadeve para bhakti yatadeve tata guru. Tashyati katita hi yata prakashante mahatmana. Things become revealed by devotion, not by so-called education. No. So, by a little prasad, satisfaction. So in many places these things are stated. So one has to therefore, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Yasha prasadad bhagavat prasada. So not that the bhagavat prasad is achieved by education and grammar. No, yasha prasadad bhagavat prasada. By the mercy of the guru one can achieve. That is just like a common word that if you love me, love my dog. So you cannot approach Krishna without loving his dog, his servant, satam prasangat. A person who is trying to distribute the message of Krishna, he is a very, very dear dog of Krishna. Yeah. Very nice. Nacha tasman manushyesu kaschin me priyakritama. So he is very dear. It does not matter how far he is advanced in education, how far he has learned grammar. These are not the things. The thing is how far he is working to carry out the mission of Krishna. Then one has to receive Krishna's mercy through the bona fide servant. Krishna cannot be bluffed by so-called education and grammar. Krishna is not so fool. Bachyamam abhijanati. He never says, by grammar or by education you can understand. He never says, Bachyamam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvata. We should be educated, we should be very careful, but the real thing is bhakti. Bhajate mam ananya bhak sadareva samantavya apichet sudarachara. So in many places it is said. So even a bhakta writes something which is not very grammatically or rhetorically correct, still it does not matter. Tadvag vishargo janatag viplava namani yantasya yashon kitani yat. But because he has tried to broadcast the glories of the Lord, even if it's not in perfect language, still, that is his qualification. So, by devotion. The sadhus, they are not interested in rhetoric or grammatical adjustment. A sadhu wants to see who has spoken. If he is a Vaishnav, then his word will be accepted. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu strictly prohibits that if one is not a Vaishnav, then you should not hear from him. A Vaishnava mukod grinnam. Putam hari katam ritam, shravanam naiva katavyam. But he is such a learned man. Or he writes so nicely and correctly. No, because he is not a Vaishnav, we should not hear from him. Why? Why? Is it so nicely written? No. Sarpochistam yatapaya. Milk is very good food, everybody knows. But as soon as one is, it is touched by the lips of a serpent, it is poisoned immediately. Therefore it is forbidden. And one who has no knowledge how to respect the guru, then how can he become a Vaishnav? Charya Vaishnav Seva Nishtara Payachikeva. Narottam Das Thakur has said, if you don't become the faithful servant of the Vaishnav, then there is no possibility of your liberation. So our determination should be to serve the previous guru and the acharyas, evam parampara praptam. That is our determination. Tandara charani seva. So not directly to Krishna, because to serve the Vaishnav is actually more than serving Krishna directly. Madbhakta pujabhya dika. Krishna likes that. He does not accept anybody's service directly. That is a gross mistake. Therefore Narottam Das is teaching us, trying to become one with Krishna or one with the gopis, this is all Mayavad philosophy. You have to serve the servant of Krishna. And this is the way, not directly. So, very elaborate explanation there. A condemnation of Nittai's, you know, give me your blessing so I can find out somebody better than you. Yeah. Killing the guru. And as you're killing him, asking him, give me your blessings. Yeah. Just wrestle them, that's all. Even if you think that you're very learned, or even if you know, you know, you can chant more slokas than your guru, you can, you know, speak Sanskrit or whatever, but still, in front of your guru, you have to be very humble and accept him as your superior and as the representative of Krishna, because the transmission is through bhakti. It is not through, you know, grammatical or, you know, some kind of scholarship. It is through bhakti, that's all. That's what we learn from the guru. All right, it's getting a little late. I'm going to finish at this point. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yes.
Probably a nitpicking question. You mentioned that Maharaj Dasarath was cursed because he was using his mantras.
Well, there's a long story there why Dasarath Maharaj was cursed to lose his son and die because of it. I don't know the exact story. It's a long time since I heard it. But previously he had, I think, I'm speculating now. I can't remember. Does anybody know that story? Why Dasarath Maharaj was cursed to lose his son and die because of it? It's in the Ramayana. But there was some, you know, all of these things in the Vedas. You read these stories about various personalities and things that happened to them. And usually it's because of something in their past life or many lives before they got cursed, and therefore they had to take a birth in a certain position, you know, just like Bhishma Dev. Oh, there's so many stories, there's hundreds of them. All of these personalities, they've all, you know, got histories. In the Puranas, you read about them and you find out why a particular thing happened because of a previous activity, and they got, you know, they displeased some sage or something like that, and they got cursed. So Dasarath Maharaj also, he was given a curse like that. Yes. Speak loudly. I'm a little deaf nowadays. I have to. Yes. All right, the question was that sometimes we hear Prabhupada stress that you should, you know, make it your business to go back to Godhead in this lifetime. But then sometimes we hear that preaching is actually even higher than your own salvation. And, you know, sometimes devotees, they come back again in future lives just so that they can do more preaching. So what is more important? Prabhupada did stress that, you know, for most of us, we should have that very strong desire to go back home, back to Godhead, to get free of Maya, and to go back to Godhead and finish up the business in this one life. If you don't have that strong desire to do that, then if we're, you know, in any way a little contaminated or contacted with the three modes of material nature, then, you know, if we lose that desire to get free of the material world, we may also lose the impetus to actually get pure. Yeah, and we may settle for something less. So it's nice to say, I want to, you know, take another birth as a preacher in Krishna consciousness. If we're elevated enough and we're actually fixed up and we're sure that we won't be contaminated by the contact with Maya, then that kind of birth, you know, that kind of desire, nadanam najanam nasundaram kavitam jagadishakama mama janmani janmanishwari, I don't want even, you know, I can take birth after birth. That's when you're completely pure. You know, then you can have that desire to, you know, take another birth and preach. You know, if you're already fixed up, and there's no danger that by taking another birth, then you'll fall back down into the material pool. So the best thing is to, you know, desire to go back to Godhead first. When you've got that fixed up, then where you'll go afterwards, whether you go preaching or you go back to Goloka Vrindavan, let Krishna decide that. It's nice to want to have a strong desire to go out and preach. That's a fact. But as long as, you know, we're still contaminated with material desire, you know, still agitated by that, we still get attracted by different aspects of Maya, then the better thing is to desire to go back home, back to Godhead, and get the business finished up. When we actually get to the liberated platform and we feel free from Maya, then we may desire, you know, to serve Krishna in a particular way, according to Krishna's indication. So that's a kind of on a different level. At least it's on a different level than I'm on. I can tell you that. I was with Prabhupada in New York in 1976 when Rameshwara Swami asked him a question about, you know, preaching and, you know, the movement going on for 10,000 years. And he asked Prabhupada that just like Krishna, when he appears, he doesn't come alone. Yeah, there's so many different personalities that take birth before him or in advance, all the demigods and associates, and they prepare the ground ready for when Krishna personally comes. And then when Krishna does appear, they join up with him, you know, and then the whole Leela is enacted, whatever his purpose is. So he asks, is that also true of the Acharya? Yeah, so like somebody like Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, yes, he also has his associates. And wherever he goes, they go. And they help him in his mission of preaching. So there are some personalities that travel with Srila Prabhupada wherever he goes. And, you know, they take their births in different places. And they help him, you know, with his mission. Prabhupada also said, there are some personalities, their business is preaching. That's their service to Krishna. So they go back to Godhead just to make a report. And then again, they come, you know, somewhere in the material world and they continue on with the business of rescuing the conditioned souls. So like that, Prabhupada was one of those kinds of personalities. Bhavananda used to tell a story. He heard Prabhupada say that Prabhupada was saying, I'm not, you know, a very renounced person. He said, I don't like austerities. Yeah, I you know, I like some comfort. So, you know, he said, I'm a bit reluctant in that way. So Prabhupada said, but Krishna told me, you just go down and then I'll make all the arrangements for you. So, you know, that was an indication that Prabhupada was sent specifically by Krishna to do a particular purpose. And Krishna told him, I'll make all the arrangements, don't worry. Because we see that Prabhupada was, you know, practically the most renounced person of all. But that was his humility. So, you know, there are indications of the things that Prabhupada said. One time in response to, you know, Vyasa Puja offerings that had been sent to him, he sent a letter out to all his disciples. He said that I take it that you are all the representatives of my Guru Maharaj who have been sent by him to help me with this mission. And of course, if Prabhupada had come to the West and there were no, you know, persons who had already performed devotional service previously, then who would he, you know, have got the help from to spread the movement? He said that devotees had actually taken birth in the West specifically to help fulfill this prediction of Lord Chaitanya. And that when he came, he was simply picking them up and activating them, if you like, to continue with the preaching mission. So, you know, there's a lot of different statements there. It is nice if you want to help Prabhupada with his preaching and you see that, you know, as your eternal occupation. But that kind of desire, you know, should be matched by the purity, you know, purified situation we have to be on in order to be able to fulfill that desire. Otherwise, if we do take another birth and we're not pure, then we may get distracted, and there's no guarantee then, you know, that we'll have problems. Instead of, you know, adding to the mission, we may, you know, then cause a problem for it. Is that all right? Any other questions? Yes, sir. Yes.
Sitting in a secluded place.
Yes.
Chanting is cheating. It's also mentioned that there are two types of devotees, one is the Bhajanandis and Koshyanandis.
Yeah.
So, where Sri Prabhupada mentions that Bhajanandis are they sit in a secluded place and they just keep chanting Koshyanandis.
Yeah.
Go out and chanting on in this kind of devotees are what? Because we do chanting on Japa and that as well as to the Kursa chanting. So how do we understand this, it's mentioned that Bhajanandis are also one of the type of devotees, but here...
Well, your specific question is how do we distinguish between the cheaters that are mentioned in that verse by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur did call, there's a certain kind of so-called Babaji, they sit down and make a show of chanting. Bhaktisiddhanta also wrote that poem. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also wrote a poem, a similar poem, Kali Chala. Yeah, they dress in the cloth of Rupa Goswami. This will come up in the next section actually, but they dress up like Rupa Goswami, you know, with the loincloth and the beads, and they have tilak and they have mala, and they are Kali Chala. They're followers of actually Kali, not not Lord Chaitanya, because it's all just a show. You know, they take up Vaishnavism as an easy way to earn, you know, a meal, basically. But they're not actually pure devotees. But, so your question was, how does that compare to actual Babajis? Yeah, those who, because there are Bhajanandis and there are Ghostianandis, there are some persons who sit solitarily in one place and just chant. And then, you know, there are the preachers that go out and spread the holy name around. So are there any bona fide Bhajanandis, or are they all cheaters? No, there are actually some bona fide, you know, Paramahamsas like Jagannath Das Babaji, Gaurakishore Das Babaji. You know, their business was just chanting all, you know, continuously. They weren't out actively preaching, but they were pure devotees. So we don't say that, you know, every Babaji that you see in Vrindavan is bogus or a cheater. But unfortunately, a lot of them are. And distinguishing between those who are bona fide and who are not requires a little expertise. And if you associate with those that are not bona fide, as Nittai did, you know, then you may get misled. And then you may end up committing very grave offenses against bona fide devotees. So one has to be a little educated and understand properly what the standards are. There are genuine, you know, Babajis and advanced devotees in Vrindavan, but there's also, unfortunately, a lot of rascals as well. We'll hear more about that in tomorrow, probably. Any other questions, comments? Okay, so we'll finish there. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.